Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you, Lindsay. And I appreciated what you said to really kind of set both of us up. As Lindsay said, I've had the honor to be involved in community medicine now since 1997, actually, was when I took the position with the community-oriented primary care clinics, which is what I'm going to be speaking to you about today. I will cover essentially the evolution of the community-oriented primary care clinics as medical homes over time, speak to you a little bit about our implementation process of the electronic medical record, and then talk to you about our future plans to really begin to more deeply impact community health and understand disparities better. I wanted to start, though, to provide a little context about Parkland Health and Hospital System. Currently, we are a health system with only one hospital. We were founded in 1894 and act as the primary teaching hospital for the University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center. Excuse me. We provide about $500 million of uncompensated care. Our mandate is, of course, to serve the underserved in Dallas County. Currently we have operating beds of 685. Our average patient stay is a little long right now from our perspective, 4.9 on the adult side. We don't have pediatric patients at Parkland Health and Hospital System in the hospital proper. And then our neonatal days, we do have an ICU unit, and our neonatal days are 19.9. Annual admissions, as you see, 56,000. Our emergency room visits are pretty much capped at 130,000. We are attributing that to the activity that we have going on in the community with the community clinics. And then the annual specialty and COPC health center visits are nearing a million. The community visits of that number comprise almost 60%. So we're trying to keep more and more of those visits completely in the community. Our clinics are not only named community-oriented primary care, but we also implement a process whereby we define a population and go about working with the community at all steps to determine what are the care issues in those communities and what interventions are we going to implement in conjunction with the community. And then we are getting closer and closer to actually getting those outcome measures. So we feel that that really enhances and broadens the primary care medical home concept considerably. Back in 1986, Parkland executives were able to gain approval with the concept, really, even then, of a medical home for our population that we serve as in Dallas County. So they were able to attain that in 1986. We use upper payment limit dollars, for the most part, to fund the clinics. At that time, once we gained approval, we went about doing kind of a three-phased assessment process to really understand the Dallas County community as best we could in order to locate the clinics appropriately in our population areas. As you can see on the slide, we looked at population characteristics, economic status, educational level, health status indicators, and of course we were also keenly interested in what other primary care physicians were already in the communities that we were going to serve. As I said, our vision then was already in the direction of medical homes. We wanted to provide the patients with their own doctor. We wanted to look at the patients and families from a more holistic point of view and coordinate healthcare across our system, as well as with this particular patient population. There are many social needs and psychiatric needs and those types of things, which are not services that are all contained at Parkland. So at that point in time, back in the mid-80s, we gained approval from the state to begin actually hiring primary care physicians. Currently, we have about 120 primary care physicians, whether they're internists, family medicine, pediatrics, and some geriatricians. We also wanted our larger sites to be full-service sites, having lab on-site, radiology on-site, pharmaceutical, Class A pharmacies on-site. Again, our population has a lot of social needs, so we have social workers. And then we've embedded into our primary care model behavioral health services as well. And then in our neck of the woods, language services are extremely important. There is English, Spanish, and then I think Cambodian, Vietnamese are the next two highest occurring languages. So we have phones as well as interpreters. Then back to the needs assessment, we identified four really high needs areas in the county to place health centers, and then four moderately needy areas across Dallas County. So the first clinics were established in West Dallas and East Dallas of the county. The county's kind of like a big rectangle, and those were two of the highest need areas that were originally identified. And then in 1991 was the first time we built our first full-service health center in, again, another high-need area. Over the course of the 90s, we grew to have six full-service sites. And when I say full-service sites, I mean all of the ancillary services are contained on-site. Those clinics are approximately 40,000 square feet, so they're not small. And they serve anywhere between 50 and 65,000 visits per year. We also have three satellite sites. Also, our age range is essentially womb to tomb. You know, we serve all ages at the full service sites. The three satellite sites do not have the ancillary services on site. We have point of care lab testing, but we don't have full pharmacies or radiology services there. A couple of those sites serve only pediatrics, and then one of the others serves in a family medicine model, all ages. We also added a mobile homeless program. Primary health care services and medical home services can also be designed for the homeless. We serve about 20 homeless shelters across Dallas County using the four medical vans. And then we've just brought online two dental vans. We're still kind of tweaking those services so that we get the most productivity possible on the vans. That's, again, kind of new to us. And our partner in dental services is fairly new to the mobile approach as well. Then as our population ages, we established a really high-risk, high-intense clinic for geriatrics that we provide medical homes for those who are frail. And then in all of the other health centers that are larger health centers, we have a geriatrics module that specializes in the care of those geriatrics patients who are beginning to have more problems. If they're relatively healthy, they may have their primary care physician, just a routine primary care physician, and not delivered by a geriatrician. Even though we had all that in place and we began teaming as well, when I first came to COPC, I found that the doctors would work by themselves, the nurses would work by themselves. You know, everybody was kind of independent in their practice, which does not go very far to create a really coordinated medical home for a patient. So we were still having difficulties with those types of things, created some teaming concepts that had been implemented by this point, but we're still having difficulty understanding who was associated with what primary care physician team. So oddly, when we started implementing Epic at Parkland, my area got to go first. We were not Y2K compliant with the system that we had been using. So we implemented Epic, but only the business components. And that actually created one of our biggest leaps towards the creation and the coordination of a medical home. We could suddenly appoint a primary care physician and understand who that patient was associated to. The patient could select their doctors themselves. Panels could be established. We could start looking at how many patients were in each clinical team's panel. so that we could better gauge what is our capacity and how do we need to recombine resources in order to create better access. It led us down the path of implementing open access concepts as well. And then each physician could set up their own template and that was most patient-friendly to their panel of patients, so that the physician felt more in control of the patients that they were trying to care for. And the pediatricians, of course, created their templates to accommodate a lot more acute care walk-ins, and they could create seasonality with this implementation, and the adults could be a little bit more stable. And then with the geriatrics patients, we could allow a lot longer appointment times so that we could care for them in a more holistic way. We could begin understanding our patient population better, as I said. And then the referral module was really the first automated leap across the system, so that when we made a specialty referral, we could begin to understand what had happened to our patient subsequent to that referral. Other advancements that we wanted to embark upon were just how are we providing pediatric patient care, and to whom, and how much care were we providing. So we started linking better to Parkland. At Parkland, we deliver about 16,000 babies. I believe across the country, we are the highest volume hospital with regards to births of babies. And so about 85% of those babies are appointed automatically into our community network for the first 3 to 5 visit day and then 2 weeks, etc. We also had a lot of children with asthma, and so we partnered with ExxonMobil. Turns out that a high-level executive with Exxon was very interested in asthma care because of his son. And so they approached us and wanted to partner with us to create an asthma program in our school-based clinics. So we started shared medical appointments at 5 urban schools around asthma. We're also doing the same across all of the health centers as well as the school-based clinics, beginning to address the obesity issue with adolescents and pediatrics. Then we just implemented a mental health approach to the pediatric patient population. We're working with the state, and we've gained dollars on a settlement where we've hired 5 essentially social workers. They're not psychiatric workers, well, they are, but they're not psychiatrists or psychologists. They're social workers who are helping us better identify our children in social situations that are untenable for them and identify anxiety and depression issues earlier with the idea of prevention. On the adult and geriatric sides, again, not so much because of this early EPIC implementation, but that helped us organize our thoughts and our actions enough that we started moving in the direction of, let's ensure that the care that we're providing across our health centers is standard for those patients that we're serving. So we wanted to focus on preventive care as well as disease management. Our philosophy with regards to the medical home is that it must contain both elements. So we're in the process, here on the slide you'll see those clinical practice guidelines that we have already developed and those that we are currently working on. And then again, we're constantly working and improving the referral process. Again, if you're going to be a medical home, there's going to be a multitude of places that potentially with this patient population you will have to refer patients to, and we're trying to refine and develop that process so that when we make that referral we actually understand what happened and then can embed that and integrate that into the primary care that we deliver. As I said, we also have behavioral health and social services as part of our primary care activity, and probably for the last 7 years particularly, what we've been seeing in the Dallas County area is social situations that are outstripping our ability to provide health care and have it be sustainable. So we've had psychosocial screens in the past, but we didn't use them the way that we're using them now. And in part, it's creating more information than we can ever do anything with, but at the same time, it's identifying upfront in a more proactive way those individuals that we need to link into social work immediately and start working more intensely with them around their social circumstances so that we can provide health care that is sustainable. Right along with that, we gained a HOG grant to start working with adults on depression management in primary care. And we're just amazed at the level of depression that some of our families really have and think is normal. So it's a process where, again, we're trying to be holistic in our approach to depression and psychiatric disease and not just look at the medication side of it, but look very heavily at what are the social things and the family situations that are probably driving the person's depression, anxiety, etc., and trying to really create balance there. And that's why we created our shared psychological groups where up to, in those groups, we keep them around 9 or 10. In a lot of shared medical appointments, you'll go up to 15, sometimes more than that, depending upon what exactly you're going to address with the group. And we actually create plans for the patients around their psychological needs and their social needs in conjunction with their medical needs. We have smoking cessation for our patients. We'll be moving that soon into the schools for the adolescents who are smoking. And then pain management is a really big issue, a growing issue for us in our situation. So we've created an interdisciplinary program that helps us work with the families of somebody with chronic pain. We put the patient on a contract and then try to keep the services for these patients along with their medication treatments very much integrated. And then stemming from that, we created a challenging patient approach also. And a lot of times, the patients that are the most challenging to us are those patients who are chronic pain patients and are on high doses of pain medications. So those two activities kind of work hand in hand. Just a little bit, I've mentioned shared medical appointments, but we actually brought Dr. Nofsinger from Kaiser in to help us implement the shared medical appointments. Actually, many years ago now, he told us at the time, I don't know that this is actually fact, but he told us at the time there were no other public hospitals implementing shared medical appointments, and that we were... he had not formally thought that you could do newborn shared medical appointments, and most of the babies that are coming out to us from Parkland, their first visit is in a shared medical appointment, and the families and the moms and dads that come find that very valuable from a learning perspective, as well as just the facility of having the easy appointment. We also use shared medical appointments with our asthma kids in the schools and our pediatric asthma or our pediatric obesity population. And then all of our sites are ADA certified for our diabetes management program, and we use education classes and see our diabetic patients frequently in shared medical appointment manners. This is voluntary, whether it's a newborn or anybody participating in a shared medical appointment, it's totally voluntary. We do not force anyone, nor do we force our providers to have shared medical appointments. One of the biggest things we did, though, with this concept to help improve our primary care physicians' access was to implement the shared medical appointment with medication refills so that they weren't seeing the physician again if it was just for a refill, but they could go to a group, learn more about other types of medications and other types of conditions, as well as get their medications refilled. What we feel very strongly about, too, is as you're making these changes, it is your responsibility to keep your staff up to par on what's going on and what changes have you made, and making sure that they understand the expectations that you have around whatever has been newly implemented. And a lot of the times, they've been a part of the implementation, but in our clinics, we have about 650 staff overall, so we have quite a training task. So we have a real tight training and development program We teach on competency skills. We have quarterly forums where all staff come and we present new things that are happening in medicine. We've had things on the medical reform and those types of things, just to keep them informed and apprised of what's going on and what Parkland is looking at doing. We train. Recently, we also revamped our urgent care and started what we call a today clinic at each of the sites to make sure, again, that that acute care, people can walk in and get that acute care whenever they need that and still have that association with their primary care provider. Currently, we do our own coding with oversight from coders, so we do a lot of training of not only our business staff, but our physician and nursing staff as well, and then train, of course, on clinical practice guidelines. And then most recently, we're working with Morehouse College on the development of a fellowship to teach other organizations across the country about the community-oriented primary care concept and partnering with people in the community. Probably, though, most of the training we've been doing recently is around this next piece, which I feel pretty strongly, and we were probably one of the organizations that commented back to NAPH that we feel like health information technology is pretty critical to the medical home. I think if you're small enough, it's not as critical, but if you're pretty big, if you want to do good population medicine and case management, you need an automatic mechanism in which to do that. So we, this past year, across my clinics, implemented the module called EpiCare, which is the electronic medical record for primary care settings. We had also, right previous to that, implemented ASAP, which is Epic's module for emergency care and urgent care. This is all integrated, so ASAP is just better designed for urgent care and emergency settings, whereas EpiCare is better designed for primary care or specialty care settings. And then the hospital has been implementing CPOE over the last year and will continue to do that over the course of 2010. And then lastly, for a lot of different reasons, the specialty clinics will go last. And you know, the implementation of an electronic medical record, it's really vital to have your physicians totally on board and helping you develop every aspect of that. And for the most part, that's why specialty's going last. We have about 176 different specialties at Parkland. So we want to make sure that the specialists get good opportunity to make sure that they're operating the way that they feel is necessary to serve our population. I've already touched on some of this. Population medicine and case management in a way that I really never dreamed of is now just at your fingertips. It isn't fully developed, and I'll touch upon that in a minute, but it's very possible. Even with just the primary care clinics live on the electronic medical record, it's easier to communicate with the specialty clinics because they can see what we're doing. Obviously, it promotes continuity of care. We have all of the best practice alerts in place for the health management of all populations and can better integrate that into the actual visit, no matter why the patient has presented. Though we've got lots of conversations going on about to what extent do you do that, because what we don't want to encourage in our population is that they don't come for their health maintenance care because we're taking care of it in other ways. But that's going to be an ongoing conversation. Then the clinical smart sets that you're able to use with EpiCare really dovetail with your clinic practice guidelines, and you can embed how you want to provide medicine by using those smart sets. It also offers electronic prescribing and test tracking. And with all of this, our future plans will include becoming NCQH accredited, and then we will be revamping how we deliver care to We put this technology in, we made some changes ahead, and now see that it's a good opportunity to redesign some more things, and we'll implement and pilot that. We're working with our board on strategic expansion. And as I said, we'll be enhancing the electronic medical record as we make changes in care. And so it's really referral tracking webinars. We're not a really huge public hospital, but I wanted to close with this quote by Margaret Mead, who is from Philadelphia, by the way, that a small group of thoughtful people could change the world. And indeed, that's the only thing that really ever has. So that's what we are endeavoring to do. Thank you.